the joy of knowing, the joy of knowing you. Oh, the joy of knowing, the joy of knowing you. Oh, the joy of knowing, the joy of knowing you.
Welcome to Positively Joy. Are you living life but feel like something's missing? You've come to the right place. I'm Yvette Walker, your host for this podcast on finding the true meaning of God's joy. Joy is not a feeling, it's faith. And my guests and I will talk about how to avoid falling down the rabbit hole of chasing physical or emotional joy. In this season, we'll tackle spiritual growth as we discover the true joy of the Lord. It's Yvette here, putting on my writer's hat. Do you like thrills, mystery, and a little clean romance? My latest book and first novel is on Amazon. 60 is a fast-paced crime novel of a Christian reporter who goes back to the location of her first big news story about a serial killer. Now an editor, Linda Radcliffe finds intrigue and an old love. Get your copy today. Go to positivelyjoy.com/books to see all my fiction and inspirational nonfiction, like my devotional, Whispering in His Ear, and Journaling His Joy, a 6-month guided journal to help you find real joy. Today, our show is about forgiveness of the unforgivable. I spoke to Mark and Jen Sowersby last year about their amazing marriage and his amazing testimony. Mark was abused for years by his mother's boyfriend. He grew up damaged and afraid. But as he says, a perfect God helped him forgive his abuser, find a loving wife, and forgive the nightmare. He created a ministry and book, Forgiving the Nightmare, out of this terrible situation. And they have found 20 years of love in a beautiful marriage. How did they get here? Let's find out. Here's Mark and Jen. Welcome, Mark and Jennifer Sowersby, to the Positively Joy podcast. I'm so happy to have you here.
It's an honor to be with you. Thank you.
So, Mark, you and I know each other because we were on a podcast together. It hasn't aired yet, but on another podcast, Revitalizing Kindness, where I co-host with the amazing Dave Weaver. And we met, and your story really connected with me, but I wanted to get to know your better half as well, yeah. Because, you know, the life that you live together, you know, she's a part of your story now. You have a book, Forgiving the Nightmare, and people can find everything at your website, forgivingthenightmare.com. And that is very much, you know, that's what it is. I mean, you lived a nightmare. God was able to bring you through it. You learned more about him. And a nightmare turned into a ministry. Right. And we're going to get into that. We're going to talk about exactly what that was, but, I think it's going to resonate with a lot of people today, just understanding that, you know, as this show says, that we look for the joy of the Lord, and it doesn't necessarily mean that life is completely peaceful and happy all the time.
True.
But there's a joy that we get from God in a different way. And I think that that's all wrapped up in your story. So I'm glad you're here.
Well, again, it's an honor for me to be with you. And it's especially an honor to have my wife with me. Thank you so much for asking Jennifer and I both on today and have this opportunity to speak to your audience and to share the story of Forgive the Nightmare and much more, because you're going to find out the real side. My wife's here. She's going to tell it all. So
that's right. Well, so Mark, tell us a little bit about this story. Again, everything that we're talking about is wrapped up in your background and your story. And also help us understand when you began to walk with Christ.
Sure. Unfortunately, I grew up in an abusive situation. I was 7 years old when my mother would marry a man 20 years younger than her. He would come into our home and he would abuse me in every way, shape, and form. He would take advantage of me. He would lie to me. He would sexually abuse me. He'd manipulate me. In those days, we didn't know the word grooming, but he groomed me for some times before he attacked me. And for those 7 years, from 7 to 14 years old, that was just my life, a life of horror, a life of confusion, a life of emptiness, knowing the attacker was going to attack, but never sure of when or how, but it always came in an ugly, lustful, poor and ugly way. So, you know, that was my life, and many things took place. Again, you can find more about that in the book. But at 15 years old, I asked Christ in my life. I found a youth group. I found acceptance. I found friends. They weren't perfect people, but they loved me in the love of Christ. And there I said the sinner's prayer at 15 years old, probably not truly understanding everything I did at that moment, but God did, praise the Lord. And I said the sinner's prayer, and he came into my life. Looking for hope, looking for peace, looking for shelter, the church truly became my sanctuary, where I found all that thing, not with perfect people, but with Christ-like people that were real, they were honest, they made their mistakes, they had their failures, they had their good, they had their poor, but in that community is where I found the peace of God. And then I started my own journey and learning how to follow God, learning how to trust God. One step forward, two steps back. You can imagine there was an anger in me, a confusion in me, an emptiness in me. And all those things were starting to come to the surface. And one day, there was a woman in our church, the kind of woman you can't say no to. You know, there might be a few in some other churches. You know, the kind of women that say, hey, you want to do this? And you just have to. Well, that woman would ask me one day if I wanted to read the Luke story in front of the youth group. Well, one of the casualties of my abuse was my education. If I am a dyslexic, so I don't read really well. I still fight with reading today. So those days, it was really poor. And I got up and I read in front of the youth group, broken up, stumbling backwards and forwards. I was just a mess. And as I got off the platform from reading, that woman came to me and said, I homeschool all my children. I'd like to help you. Oh, I was a grown-up. You know, I was all about 21 at the time. But I got humbled enough, and I said yes, and we would go over to her house. And in my mind, we'd be in a back room with a classroom, and it would just be her and I. But that wasn't the case. The house was full of family, full of friends. And I think the six-year-old or seven-year-old would correct me when I said my vowels incorrectly. So, you know, I became very humbled. But I knew in those days, I wasn't aware that teacher of mine had an older daughter. And that older daughter grew up, and you can imagine that older daughter became my wife, Jennifer, and we are getting ready to celebrate 20 years. 20 years, honey.
20 years this year?
20 yeah. years this year, yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Four kids, 20 years. Yeah.
That is, well, happy upcoming anniversary. That is wonderful. Congratulations.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. Blessings upon blessings, right?
Yeah, amen.
In the middle of something that certainly wouldn't seem like blessings.
Yes.
Let's take a step back.
Sure.
You've mentioned a couple of things, and gosh, you know, anytime anyone commits any kind of injury against someone, it's terrible. But when someone is, you know, abusing children. And we hear stories in the news, and it's incomprehensible. We just can't even understand it. But I think that you just touched on something that a lot of people forget, and that's how it touches every part of you. And in this case, your education.
Oh, sure.
Your education, and probably, and certainly your self-esteem.
Exactly.
And that okay. piece of it. And I think that it's not just it's wrapped into the trauma. And I think sometimes okay. people forget about that.
Yeah, you're right. I believe people forget about not only the physical scars of the abuse, but what lasts even longer, I would say, is all the emotional, mental scars. So, you know, the abuse ended at 14 because of a couple of things. First of all, I got big enough to fight off my attacker. Mm-hmm. I found somebody in my family. My uncle became my defender with his strength, his love, his power, and he defended me. So the physical abuse was done of all that ugliness, and it was ugly upon ugly. But the scars that lasted well into my adulthood, I brought probably some of those scars into our marriage because those scars lasted so long, the insecurities, the fears, because not only did he steal a pound of my flesh, he also stole my dignity, my value, and my importance. So I was an insecure guy. I was messed up, you know. In those days, I was just trying to survive. Mm-hmm. In those days, I didn't feel anything. I felt empty. And even though I found a youth group and I found a place of belonging, but that's when all those ugly scars started to rise up to the surface. So in this journey of forgiveness, and that's where it ended, it didn't start with forgiveness. It started saying, God, I want to know you. I want to know you. That's where it started. And it ended, and it's never ended. I still want to know God more. But a part of that knowing God is that he would bring me to forgiveness. It was like the sum of, but not the completion of. And again, that journey is where I met Jennifer, and she's been a big part of this journey. I would have never been able to write the book. I would have been never able to do anything if it wasn't for my wife, my friend, my best buddy, everything. So
that's a great segue into how Jennifer played a part. But before we get there, just really quickly, I'm trying to comprehend, and I think other people might be. Here you are, so you're 15, you've gotten old enough to fight off your attacker, but obviously you're still a child, and there's probably still fear and uncertainty. And then roughly a year later, you find Christ. How, you know, some people might say just through the anger and everything, how could you even open your heart enough to find Christ? Like, what was that like?
Well, you know, Christ came to me, right? And in that dark place was the only light that I saw. I could put it that way. So it was the only warmth that I felt in the coldness of the abuse. It was the only word to trust. Now, again, I didn't have it all figured out. I'm the one that he left the 99 for more than once. You know, I had one foot in, I had one foot out. I would an altered time I'd be really excited about, and then I'd want to walk away. So it wasn't this perfect, you know, walk of a Christian. It was me discovering God. See, the casualties, and there are many of them, but the first casualty, not the only one, of abuse is that you lose trust. Mm-hmm. You don't trust anybody or anything, you know, and trust was taken from me. And they told me to trust God. I couldn't trust anything, but God was patient with me. So that 15-year-old prayer was the first. I was saved because of God's grace. I was delivered because of God's love. I was set free because of God, but I still was maturing. I still had to figure it out. So even though that first prayer that we call the sinner prayer instantly saved me, believe by faith and confess with your mouth, you shall be saved. But God was patient with me as I was on that journey of learning to trust, learning to die to self, learning to deal with the flesh. And that's the life journey I've been on. So, you know, I wrote the book on the other side of 50. And so, you know, there was a lot of journeying on the way. So yeah, at 15, I felt love, I felt hope, and those were foreign to me. I didn't know that at that time. So I ran to that, and that's where I found Christ.
Okay. Now, Jennifer, you are an important part of this story. Let's talk about your faith walk. So here you were, in this, obviously a very welcoming family. He comes in to learn to read better. You're there. Are you, you know, would you consider your family a Christian family, or, you know, very deep in the faith? Tell me a little bit about your faith walk.
My parents got saved when I was just before I was five. Mm-hmm. So I got saved when I was 5 years old, when I was in kindergarten. And so my life was in the church. When he was coming to the house, I was a teenager, and I would help out in children's church and Sunday school. And so we were there all day from like 8 a.m. till like 1 p.m. We were just different, you know, some of the family went in the morning, some went in the afternoon, and I was there the whole time. And our family was saved. My parents helped out in the youth group, and
Jen became my best friend. But before that, as Jen mentioned, there's a few years between us. There's seven years between us. So when I first met Jen, she wasn't on the radar. Let me say that clearly and concise. She wasn't on the radar because I didn't think of her like that. She was the kid that was around my teacher's house. I mean, a nice girl, but not at all thought of her in a romantic.
I would go and take the dog for a walk so that he could have some privacy. But mm-hmm. there were five kids in a 5-room apartment.
3-bedroom.
Yeah.
So, there was no special like homeschool room. We was the kids' table.
So I've known Jen since, you know, we were all grown up. And eventually after Jen came home from college, you know, I was a little bit older then. She was obviously older with life mm-hmm. taking its twist and turn. Then the Lord kind of pulled the veil off my eyes. And she was in her mid-20s. And I thought, oh, that's a horse of a different color. If you can yeah. I'm not calling you a horse. I'm just using the expression. Yeah. You know, so obviously, so I don't want any of the listeners to think, you know, here I was 21 and there was this kid. Again, this didn't, our romance, our marriage, our...
The, it all happened when I was in my 20s.
Yeah, late 20s.
But, you know, but for a special marriage like this, I like to say it was preordained. I mean, I feel that way about my own marriage.
I had to wait for him to grow up.
Right, yeah.
No, really, I used to say to the Lord, you know, I want a wife that loves you, will love me. And I remember Jen went away and I missed her. And I missed her. And that was a new feeling for me. And I realized I could trust her. Mm. And I think for somebody who was abused, that trust aspect was, I knew when I could trust her, I would fall in love with her because I was so afraid to trust. And I could open up my heart. I could open up myself. I could expose, if you would, all this junk and ugliness. You heard how I grew up.
Yeah.
The classic story, the stained glass girl and this guy who grew up in the mud. And I thought, no way would this girl want to talk to me. You know, I only know junk. I thought of myself as junk. I thought of myself as broken and ugly and everything. And here's this girl who's got a, you know, her grandparents are together, her great grandparents, you know, and she just had this perfect, like perfect Cinderella story. At least that's what I thought.
We weren't perfect, but my grandparents will be celebrating 70 years this year.
Oh my goodness. That's so wonderful. I mean, really, that is so wonderful.
And I don't think my father knows all the children he has. So there's the content.
Yeah. So you went away to college. He was missing you, but obviously you didn't get together until later, but you knew him. And I guess Jennifer, what I want to know is, what do you think about this guy coming over to your house? I'm sure at that age, you didn't know everything about him. You didn't know what he'd been through. I mean, I'm assuming.
No,
I didn't know that.
No, I didn't know all of that. I kind of like learned it a little bit at a time. Like, I don't know if there was a day where he sat down and said, hey, this is what happened. It was just kind of like there were things that were mentioned or I would hear things at church or when you would share things, testimony at church. So, we just kind of grew together. I remember it's funny because I was looking at my Bible that I had when I was a teenager, and there's a prayer that I had prayed for him in 96 and I was like 19 and,
wow.
Yeah.
Did you know that?
I did not know that till later. You know, I did not know that. And that
I liked him when I was younger, but I never did anything. I was the girl that was like, I wouldn't talk to anybody. Like I didn't put myself out there.
Mark, I'll share something with you. Teenage girls, we do have crushes on older guys. It happens.
Yeah. I didn't say anything.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did that prayer start? Lord, thank you for making him so handsome.
I think
handsome.
You were sick. I was praying for you when you were sick.
Thank you.
So I want to talk a little bit, and Mark, I'm really not trying to not deal with your story, but I think I think it's so important that you have, as you said, you have a wife who knows who you can trust implicitly. And here's the other thing, apparently is very supportive of you telling your story, because I can't say everybody would be that way. So I think it's important that the role that she's playing in this marriage. And I think the marriage and I haven't done a lot of shows on marriage, but I kind of really want to, because I think it is so important for two people who come together to, you know, to love Jesus and love each other and lift each other up and support each other. And that's what I'm certainly seeing in this relationship and in this marriage. So let me just ask, Jennifer, you came back from college. When did you know, oh, I'm kind of interested in this guy. Yeah. And did you think that his past would affect anything or would be a concern to you?
We have been talking even when I was in college, we talked back and forth. And so we actually talked about the possibility of getting married before we ever dated. So I said to him, that can work, but you need to take me on at least one date first. So our first official date was the day he proposed.
Wow.
So
you've been thinking about this for a minute, Mark.
Well, again, it's like when, like she said, we talked all the time. That was when we did emails. You know, there was no text, email.
IMing.
That's so, right. I remember. Yeah.
So, we talked seriously about what it would look like. And that's when we were praying. And then we spent so much time, as Jen said, when she came back, she was the 3 to 5 year old director. I was a pastor on staff. And we kind of just, you know, we'd do meetings together and then there'd always be somebody with us. And sometimes, so kind of let me explain it this way. When I was going to ask Jennifer to marry me, I went to our senior pastor and I said to him, Pastor, I just want you to know, I'm going to ask Jennifer to marry me. And he started to laugh. And I said, what are you laughing for? He said, you're the last to know. Everybody in the church, you're waiting for that. Everybody, he started laughing. So obviously we got everybody's support. And then we were so much spending time together, but it was never a date. Like you didn't, there was no, you know, I picked her up for that date. We went to Newport, Rhode Island, visited some of the mansions there. And then I said, well, she knew I was going to propose because why, honey?
Oh, he didn't like my coat. So he said, leave it in the car. I said, well, it's December and I'm freezing. So he said, well, you can use my coat, but don't put your arms in the sleeves or anything. I was like, okay, whatever. So we get he proposed at the Breakers.
One of the mansions,
and yeah. So when we got in there, he had gone off to ask permission, but I didn't know that. He had gone away. So I was looking around and then the curator or one of the ladies she's like, oh, he was just asking about the inlay in the ceiling. I'm like, he had no clue there was even inlay in that ceiling. So I knew something was up. And then when we were on the tour, they had cookies and he didn't want any. And he wasn't talking at all. I knew something was up.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was it.
Wow. But,
and answer to the other question about his past affecting our relationship in this, I knew that God had set him free. And I knew that God had done something in him because that question actually came up when he was ordained. And we went before our
council,
the council to, because, you know, they talked to the pastor and they talked to me because we were engaged. And I said, if I had any doubt that there was going to be, that it would hurt us, then I would not have gotten married. But I knew that God had set him free and that God had done something in his life. And, you know, so I don't know if that answers that question.
I'll tell you this. They, in those days, they would separate the two people for ordination and they would interview you each by yourself. They just want to make sure you're the same person you try to, you know. So they asked Jennifer if she was called to be a pastor's wife.
And I said I was called to be his wife.
Okay. Yeah.
Because it didn't matter to me what he did. When God calls you to something, he gives you the ability to do it. And
absolutely.
So it didn't matter whether he was going to be a pastor or something else. If God is joining us together, then no matter what he's doing, he's joined us together.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was.
Yeah, that's what happened. So it's been a great journey. And it's
now that doesn't mean that we see life the same. Oh, no, we are like the only thing we have in common. Raw iron, our kids, and God. Like everything else is totally.
We both like to travel.
We do like to travel. And
we like to do different things when we get there.
Yeah. Like I would like to like go in the middle of nowhere and he's like, can we see people? And like, we went for, you know, the bridal registry.
Yes.
But he wanted to come with me. So I'm thinking I'll get to pick out the things I want. And this explains it to a T. We were picking out shower curtains and I picked out a blue floral I thought would look nice in the bathroom. And he comes up with this geometric black and white design. I was like, oh no. You know what we got? We got white because that was
agree on.
Well, compromise. It's important. It's important.
And that's been our journey. We work together and, you know, it isn't, I think we balance each other. He brings, you know, life and laughter, and I bring like, here's
the deal, Jack.
Yeah. No. So Jennifer, you just said something I just really want to kind of focus on for a minute. You said that you knew God had freed him. Mm-hmm. And that's going to bring me back to the forgiveness, because forgiving someone who's hurt you deeply is really, really difficult. And a lot of people listening might say, well, I couldn't do that. Well, you couldn't either without God's help.
That's right. That's right. 100%.
So let's talk a little bit more about why forgiveness is important, because obviously, Jennifer, you saw it. You saw it that God had freed him in order for him to forgive. And that was important to you. And mm-hmm. to enter into life with a man. So talk, either one of you, talk a little bit about why forgiveness is so important.
I think it sets you free. It sets you free from the, what the other person did was done to you. Mm-hmm. And you had no control over that, but you have control over how you respond. And God, I think when God calls us to forgiveness, he doesn't say that life is going to be easy. But everything God asks us to do is for our good, and it's the right thing to do. And I don't know how to explain it anymore other than it sets you free from what they tried to steal and what they tried to take. And God will use anything that happens in our lives, everything that happens in our lives, the good, the bad, the ugly, the up, the down, the things that, the hot mess that we're dealt, God will take and make something beautiful out of it. And even if all it is like in our case, the hot mess that he went through, God is using to help other people. Mm-hmm. As long as we stay willing and open to be used by God. When is that good?
You're good.
Is that
you're sounding good to me, honey? you know, I think for me, forgiveness is a journey. It starts with God, ends with God. It's surrounded by God. I think that if it wasn't for God, I would have some kind of a phone of vain forgiveness, because God helps me inspect my own heart and intentions. And I keep laying them at the altar saying, Lord, help me forgive. I forgive because Christ told me to. Mm-hmm. He forgave me. But that journey was hard, and I don't try to pretend it's not. I don't say it was, you know, one service, a dollar in the plate.
It's not one service. And done.
Yeah, it's been a journey, and there's been one step forward, two steps back. More than once I wanted to throw in the towel. More than once I would say, God, it's too hard. I ask God all the hard questions. If you're a loving God, then why did I get molested? If you're really there, then why did this happen? Of course, I didn't just, you know, this just wasn't sprinkled with sugar and sweetness. This was a real journey that was full of tears and pain. And I really had to wrestle. I knew God's word, but I still had to wrestle with it. But because I knew God, there's a lot of religion out there. There's a lot of doctrine out there. And they're not always bad things, but really my journey started with wanting to know God. And it was almost like I tell a story that if you have the faith of a mustard seed, you can move a mountain. I didn't know what that meant. I didn't know what that meant at all. And I just said, Lord, teach me. And the Lord said, Mark, can you move a pebble? And I said, I can move a pebble. I can be the best pebble mover you ever met. And then through the years and through the seasons and through the ups and the downs, marriage and kids and everything else in between, the Lord would teach me how to move a pebble to a rock, to a stone, to a boulder, to a mound. And then one day he'd say, let's go move that mountain. And I knew what it was. I knew that mountain was forgiveness, forgiving the person who abused me and forgiving my mother who allowed me to be abused. And I had to really find out what forgiveness was before I could really say, okay, it's not forgive and forget. How can I ever forget? It's not saying it's okay. I still can seek justice, call the police, legal, you know, it's not okay, but I can still forgive it. I don't have to have a kumbaya moment. We don't have to do, you know, Easter morning together. We don't have to do, I can have my space. I can have my distance. And it's also not one time. You know, I forgive it. I have to forgive all the time, sometimes twice a day. You know, the Lord's Prayer says, give us this day our daily bread and help us forgive those who trespass against us. I think that daily works for both of those events. Yep. So when God would say, go move this mountain, I said, God, I can't. And he said, how'd you move the pebble, the stone, the rock, the boulder, and the mound? I said, you help me. He said, now I'm going to help you do this. But that was a journey of learning to trust, a journey learning to die to self, a journey learning to know that God is truly who he says he is. And I know I'm set free because forgiveness has given me life and life more abundant. It didn't make me rich. It didn't make me more handsome. It didn't make me thin. It didn't make me healthy, but it gave me a life that I never thought I'd have. We have a teenage daughter that's getting ready to go to her first high school dance. And you know what? When you have a healthy life, she's talking with mommy about how high and how low, what the sleeve should look like. And that's a normal life. Mm-hmm. And that's a miracle for me to have a son get a driver's license and say, Dad, can I have the keys? Because that's not where I come from. And that's not where I would have been if it wasn't for God helping me forgive those and help me. Now I have a beautiful wife. We got great kids. We're going up and down, left and right. We got our stuff too. You know, we're not perfect, but we love Jesus.
At some point, God called you to share this story with others. And really it has become a ministry. So tell me about that moment. When did you know that you had to go public, to use a word, and share your story to help others?
Well, it kind of happened in two phases. The first one happened, I was at college and I had joined a ministry team and we were up in Canada and they asked if somebody could close the service with a testimony. It's quite a large church, 5,000-6,000 people. I'd never been in a church that big before. And I closed the service with my testimony and I looked around and everybody was crying and I thought I did something wrong. And then we opened up the altars as we do in our faith tradition. People come down and pray one for another. And I looked at the rest of the team and there's hardly anybody praying with them. And then when I looked, I couldn't see the end of the line of people who wanted to pray with me. And I thought, Lord, I shouldn't be here. This is not a place I should be. And the Lord spoke to my heart and he said, Mark, you have a powerful testimony. And I thought, Lord, is this you? Is it me? And he said, Mark, you're going to write it down someday. And I laughed because here I am, a struggling student, a struggling dyslexic. And he said, you're going to write it down. I laughed, literally laughed. I said, God, I could never write a book. I said, if I do, what do you want me to call it? And in my heart of hearts, the Lord said, you're going to call it Forgiving the Nightmare. That took many years after I got that initial word for it to manifest, if you would. And it took, after my mom's death, this whole thing came up to the surface and we started to say, okay, we're going to do what God told us. Felt released to write it. Jen and I went to the Adirondacks. I wrote in Marketese. That's the language that I write. There's only one person that can understand it.
And I jetted it.
Yeah. So Jen edited it. But you know how I knew it was something there? Now, Jen, by this time, we were married 17, 19, 18 years at that time. And she started to cry. And she knew the whole story. And she started to cry. She said, it's different when you read it. So that's so we launched it about 2019, 2020, 2021. The book came out. But it's been in my spirit since that day. But I had to grow up. I had to mature. I had to continue to learn what forgiveness was. Mm-hmm. And I had to continue to inspect myself.
And I would say that there were key moments probably throughout our marriage that the forgiveness had to come up again. Even I had to forgive, you know, what had happened to him. And I had to forgive his mom. And I had to forgive because when we had our son, I couldn't imagine somebody allowing somebody to hurt their child.
Mm-hmm.
And when my son turned 7, it brought it up again. I was like, this is how old he was when it started. And I couldn't imagine, I would have done anything to protect. So I had to forgive again. And I didn't tell her, I didn't have to go to his mom and say, cause it was in me. It wasn't in her at that point. But I had to let go of it again, because otherwise it would have affected our son, you know. And then every so often it would come back again, and it would not haunt, but it would come back, and you'd have to deal with it on a deeper level. I think the same way, for me, because I got saved so young, I was 5 years old. People would ask me what my testimony was. And I was like, well, I don't really have one. I've been saved since I can remember. I never was one that rebelled or did any of that stuff. I don't have wow, this is a marked change. No, there was no change. There was just how I was. So, but at different points in my life, when I was 14, I rededicated my life to the Lord because I did it with a deeper understanding. So when I was 5, I accepted Jesus in my heart because my kindergarten teacher told me I should, and that Jesus loved me. And I did it every day until she said, he's not going to leave until, unless you kick him out. So at 14, it wasn't that understanding. It was that God wanted me. And it was at a Christian rock concert. And then when I was in my early 20s, I again rededicated my life to God, not because I had walked away, but because it was a deeper understanding. And I think forgiveness is the same thing, where you forgive them in the moment with what you have. Just like we learn to do things a little bit at a time, you forgive a little bit at a time. And as it comes back around, you're able to forgive a little bit more because you're going deeper in. And the same thing when you're with your walk with God, the closer you walk with him, the deeper he calls you. When you walk in forgiveness, the more you walk in it, the more that can be forgiven.
Wow. You have a counseling ministry and you're also partnering with For the Children. If there's someone out there now who has something to forgive and they're just really having some difficulty, what would you say to them and can they reach out?
Sure. First thing I would say to anybody who's going through traumas, because that's what it is. Mine was child abuse, but there's so many. Mm-hmm. You're not alone. The first lie of the enemy is he would love to separate you, isolate you, to destroy you. You're not alone. There are people who have walked the same journey, wrestled with those same things, got caught up in that same stuff, and they're out there. They're out there. They're either in your community, they're online, they're out there. Be wise, of course, but you're not alone. The enemy would love to say you're alone. God doesn't love you. People don't love you. Your past is all you'll ever be, and you're not alone. So, and to know God loves you, right? We don't have to be perfect for God to love us, because none of us would. In my church, I say all the time, thank God that we're not perfect people, but we serve a perfect God who loves us, who cares for us. And that's what we'll be celebrating tomorrow. And if people want to reach out, they can reach out to me on my website. My email's there. You can go to forgivingthenightmare.com, forgivingthenightmare.com, and you can reach out to us there, mark@forgivingthenightmare.com. You can email me. And again, our counseling is a pastoral counseling. I want to just make sure I'm not a clinical counselor. I don't hold that license in counseling, but I'm a pastor and I do pastoral counseling. But if this thing gets deeper, I have great resources. I could send people who need that deeper in Christ-like counseling. I use counseling. Because of all the junk we had, we talk to friends and counselors and coaches. So, we're not alone and people come beside us.
Wow. Well, thank you so much. This has been such a great conversation. As you say, no matter what the trauma was, no matter what you went through, there's generally something in our past that we should forgive, Amen. You know? Amen. And it's something that sometimes we just want to put to the side. We don't want to think about it anymore. But if you do that, it's going to seep back in. It's going to have an impact on your life. And as Jen said, you can be freed of that just by forgiveness. And I think that that's so powerful. So I appreciate both of you coming on today. Is this the first time you've been on a show together?
I think we did one other.
Okay.
Yeah. Jen does, I get in trouble if I call her up on the altar. I say, my wife's going to come up here today. I get the eyes all the way up.
Well, I mean, I appreciate both of you coming up because I really do think, in a marriage, you've got to have that support and understanding each other's stories and just everything that we've talked about today. So thank you so much. And I encourage people to get the book, Forgiving the Nightmare, go to the website, forgivingthenightmare.com, for more information. Mark and Jennifer, thank you so much.
Thank you. It's an honor being with you. God bless you.
Have a good night.
From Positively Joy Ministries comes Journaling in His Joy, a new journal that can help you discover what brings real joy by journaling every day and creating a 6-month record of memories worth collecting. With over 240 journaling pages, monthly and weekly check-in sheets, and weekly coloring journal pages, this guided journal will help you find joy even in difficult times by actively looking and choosing to see it in every moment. In this journal, you'll look for joy every day and record what you see and experience. Maybe you'll experience it in a rainbow or a song or in the sound of laughter. Choose joy on days where nothing seems to go right and spread that joy to others. Get your copy of Journaling in His Joy, available at Amazon and other fine booksellers. Thank you for listening to Positively Joy. Go to positivelyjoy.com to hear previous episodes and to learn more about our ministry and books. Support Positively Joy by becoming a Patreon member and sign up for our newsletter. Thanks to Mars Coleman for the use of his song, The Joy of Knowing. And thanks to Susan Marie for editing and production of the podcast. Till next week.
Oh, the joy of knowing, the joy of knowing.